This episode was recorded earlier this year as part of our conversations with culture leaders. And while it might not be explicitly about AI, the technology is forcing us to really rethink how work works. And many of these ideas are becoming even more relevant. So let's jump right in. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Today on the program, Dr. Gary Krotaz, who is an international keynote speaker, executive coach, and the host of the incredible podcast, the Unlock Moment podcast. We're going to be talking about what the Unlock Moment is, how he got here from to be kind of opining and sharing about these incredible moments, moving from having been inside of organizations and a leader, to something more, I think more meaningful probably to you, Dr. Gary. So thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It's awesome to have you on.
Fantastic. Really a great pleasure to be here, and thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. So, tell us your let's quickly do what is an unlock moment so that we can get on the same page, and then how did you come to that? How did that come to you? Where did that come from?
An unlock moment is a moment that you remember 10, 20, 30 years into the future. And you think back and you think, I can remember exactly where I was, who I was with, what I was thinking in this moment when I knew a thing I didn't know before. For some people, an unlock moment could be something about a career change. They suddenly figured out that they hated their job. They didn't necessarily know what they wanted to do next, but they knew this isn't for me. It could be a moment where somebody stepped across their values and they went, hang on, this is really important to me. It could be in the middle of a health event, and they suddenly go, hang on, I've been focusing 100% on work and I've been neglecting myself. It's all sorts of different things. What makes it an unlock moment is it's a really vivid memory about a knowing that you had many, many years before. It isn't a time when you did something. You might do something in your unlock moment, but often when you say to people, tell me about the moments in your life where you remember, they say, the day I quit my job. And I go, when did you know you were going to do that? Oh, that's different. About a year before I actually quit. Yeah, I was having a conversation with my boss. We were sitting in the corner office and she turned around to me and she said this thing. And I was like, we're not aligned. And I haven't really thought about that before. But now you ask me that question, when did I know that I was going to quit? Yeah, it was then. And then I go, what do you think was going on for you then? Oh, well, and then you're into a values conversation, a culture conversation, a purpose conversation. And really, really often, and I've released 180 odd episodes of the podcast now. I've done a lot of conversations with people all over the world, and they're all different. But very often, what they're doing now or what they should be doing now is somehow connected to this moment that is like a lens on their deepest underlying sense of purpose. That's how I describe it. That's an unlock moment.
That's incredible. I'm thinking, I'm reflecting myself on some of those moments, and I will tell you that my journey into culture, I wasn't always a culture guy. I was started in brand, and I was in this moment of not having a job and figuring out what I really wanted to do. And I remember exactly where I was. I was on a run. And I realized I wanted to help people and I wanted to do it with business. And I had this like epiphany around it's about this promise of having great Mondays. I know exactly on the which street in Berkeley, California, exactly that moment, it was just like bam in my face. And is that the kind, 'cause like here I am, it's like I am just convinced like culture is such an important thing. Like that feels like that was the unlock moment for me. Is that the
And how
right
do I
way to
know
think
it's
about
an
it?
unlock moment? Because
Yeah.
you said I was on a run and I was like, there you go. That's the vividness.
Yeah.
Many people listening to your show might know Michael Ibrant from Gallup, who all the videos for Gallup, CliftonStrengths, all of that. Jim Collison and Michael Ibrant did all of those videos. I interviewed her on the podcast 2 weeks after she left Gallup, after a 14-year career. And she said, no, my unlock moment was how I arrived at Gallup. She was in a broadcast career, and listen to how vivid this was. She said, "I was driving my 1997 Honda Accord down Rosa Parks Way in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I stopped at a stoplight that I always stop at. And in front of me was a Jeep, and on the back of the Jeep was a wheel, spare wheel, and the wheel cover said, 'Life is good.' And I went, 'And I feel like mine isn't.'" And that was, and I was like, "What did you know then?" And she said, "I knew that the career I was in wasn't right for me. I had no idea what I would go and do instead." It's the knowing. And often when you ask people, or you hear people telling their career stories, they jump over the unlock moment. So they'll go, "Well, I used to do this thing, and then I pivoted, and now I'm doing Great Mondays Radio." And I'm like, when did you know that was going to happen?" "Oh, well, now you make me think about it. I was on a run." "What was, why that day? Why that? What was going, oh, well, actually, just before I went on the run, I just come off a phone call with this person," and they, you know, and suddenly they start exploring something deeper. So the unlock moment is a moment that you can explore, but it is a lens on something. And what I found over the years, and this comes up in my coaching, and I do keynotes on unlock moments and workshops and all sorts, and I encourage people and leaders to use the unlock moment as a tool to understand themselves and their people more. And on the question of culture, you know, the thing that I keep saying to senior leaders is, you think that people come to work for you because of your purpose and your mission statement. And I'm like, no, they come to work for you for their purpose. And you don't know what it is because you probably never asked them. You've just kept showing them the slide and banging down, you know, "This is our purpose and this is what we're all going to do." And it's like, when you say to them, you know, "So what is important to you?" Ask them about their life, ask them about that, those moments in their life, and they'll tell you the stories. And for some of them, they'll be with you because it's a great career opportunity. Some of them will be there with you because it's a steady income so that their kid can go to football class. You know, it will be all sorts of different things, and all of those things are right. But once you start to connect with their purpose through understanding who they are and what really matters to them, you're in a completely different culture conversation. So this is why, as I'm starting to work more and more with people, and they're going, "Oh, this isn't just stories." I said, "No, it's not stories at all. It starts with the story, but it's like Simon Sinek's Start With Why on steroids. It's like much deeper than that, more powerful than that." I've done a couple of times at big events. I've done this live on stage with somebody, with a leader, or
And you didn't
with
know it wasn't rehearsed.
no, it wasn't rehearsed, and I didn't know what the story was. I did this in an organization. It was their global directors conference, so they got all of their director level experts from around the world, and it was a professional services firm, so the global managing partner said, "Let's us do this on stage." So we're sitting on stage. There's probably 300 people in the audience in this beautiful central London venue. And he started telling a story, and I said to him, what's a moment when you remember exactly where you were, who you were with, what you were thinking, when you knew something you didn't know before?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to tell you a story about my father." And he said, "When I started in this company, my father turned around to me and said, 'So what are they paying you?' And I told him what they were paying me, and he said, 'That's what I get paid now.' And his father was a postman. And he said, 'I suddenly realized something about what my parents had had to sacrifice to get me to a place where I could be in this position.'" And as he told the story, he started to cry.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, well, I've just got fired. I'm sitting there on stage, and the
I
global
just
managing
made the
partner of the
partner
business
cry.
is
I just made the partner
in front of
cry.
his 300 top directors. And so, whilst he gathered himself together, I turned to the audience and I said, "And I want you to know that these stories that you're going to have that you might not want to share with people, and that's okay. And you might never have really thought about them yourself, and that's okay. But they can be really powerful stories." And I've had many people who on the podcast have talked about things that they've not really talked about before. And they've come to me later and they've gone, "That's now part of my story. I tell people about this is where it started." And then I talked to people in the audience and they said how powerful it was to hear their global leader, one, be be vulnerable enough and comfortable enough to tell that story. But they were like, now we understand why he's so passionate about this thing. And I was like, yeah, because it's personal.
Yeah.
You know.
It so this exercise, this reflection, this conversation is a way of getting to know oneself as much it is as it is to get to know your colleagues or your peers, I guess. And are you do you advise that leaders have these conversations for with their teams? Is that because you said, well, they don't come to work for your purpose. Is that how they like, is that the way this kind of spreads? Is that how you would advise this works?
Well, I tell stories, and immediately, as you did, people start to go, oh, yeah, I know what mine was.
Yeah.
I did a keynote at a major UK university with some mid-career MBA professionals from around the world. This woman came up to me afterwards and she said, can I tell you my story? And I said, you know, so what was the moment? And she said, she started with, my parents have always been very supportive. And I went, that's great. And she said, and they've really supported me coming, you know, being successful in business and then coming here to study. That's great. What was your moment? And she said, I was sitting in my hotel room and I just saw my graduation photo, graduating from this program. I was like, oh, who was in the photo? And she went, only me. And I said, and what did you know then that you didn't know before? And she went, ah, I'm doing this only for me.
Yeah.
But my parents were really supportive. I said, I didn't say they weren't. Who are you
Yeah.
doing it? Who are you doing this for? For me.
Interesting.
And
Yeah.
it's like, I feel so privileged to hear these people arriving in their place. And it's not done to them. It's not a process that gets something out from them. It's an invitation for them to explore for themselves.
Yeah.
So all I do is I say, literally, the methodology is two questions. And I go, here's two questions. If you find them interesting questions to ask yourself or to ask other people, you're welcome. I'm not going to say to you that you should run a workshop and ask the questions, but now you've got them in your toolkit. One question is, can you think of a time where you can remember exactly where you were? That's an unlocked moment. And then you can explore in that. Does that tell you anything that that's the story you chose to tell? You could have picked any story, you picked that one. What does that tell us? The second one is, where do we need to start in your story in order to understand the person you are today? Not tell me the beginning of your story, but where do we need to start in your story in order to understand the person you are today? I had one person answer that question with, at the age of 4, I knew the meaning of the word fear. And she talked about her relationship with her father that defined her through her childhood, through her adult life, and through her leadership. I had other people who said, well, really, this story starts at 26 when I left the career that I was going to do before and I started in this other thing. Sometimes they'll say, we only need to talk about the last year because I decided a year ago that I wasn't going to put up with what was happening before and I decided to be vulnerable and go for the thing that was difficult. And literally this week, I interviewed a Paralympic gold medalist and she knew I was going to ask that question. And she said, the answer to that question is today. She said, because what happened in the past doesn't matter at all. It just matters what we do today. And I was like, I've done 180 something of these conversations and no one's ever said today. So I said, great, what did you do today? And she went, I went for a walk. I saw the flowers. It was lovely weather. It was a beautiful day. And then, of course, when I heard her story about being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at the age of 16 and the struggle she'd been through, I was like, I understand something much more powerful about you that that's how you answered that question. So I think there's something in it that is about, as leaders and as organizations, I think we should be much more curious about our people.
Yeah.
And when people say to me, what's your philosophy on culture in organizations, Gary? And, how should we put together the operating model? And what, should we do together? And how should one-to-one meetings and group meetings work? And should we do a leadership development program? And how should all that work? And in my career, I've had lots of time and, lots of experience and expertise in doing that in leadership or doing that in advisory. But in reality, the truth is, the culture that really works comes from within, comes from your people. And leadership programs, development programs, culture programs are great and we should do them, but we shouldn't expect that those will solve our culture because that's not where it comes from.
Right.
And I think, we're sitting here in 2026 talking about this. I think in 2026, more acutely than any time in certainly the last few years, that's more true today because the workplace is so much more uncertain. So you can't go, here's the playbook because it's always worked before and it's going to work now.
Yeah.
You've got to lean in on your people
That's
and
right.
you've got to know your people, where they're coming from, what matters to them, how they want to work. We haven't even got into the differences between generations,
Yeah.
but it's a kind of countercultural message because they're all expecting me to say, oh, well, you need to spend more money and have more programs and do more workshops. And I actually less,
Yeah. Yeah.
or do them, but also make sure that you're just listening to your people and connecting with them and helping them to feel at home with you coming as they are.
Even I would suggest that the value of this is that the people inside your organization are seen for the first time. That's like one of the basic that I have learned recently is one of the basic human needs is to be seen and acknowledged. And when you ask a question, any question, even something that is far less profound than what you're asking, it actually serves a purpose of creating this connection and learning how to listen is one of the best ways to be a leader. And you are providing this even more specific, dialed in question that is incredibly deep and is, I think it's wonderful because it's individually based. It allows them to have control, and you are asking a very simple question. And if they're ready, most everybody will have some kind of answer that will reveal something they didn't maybe already know about themselves.
And they don't have to vocalize that. You can say, I'm going to ask you the question. You might just want to answer it in your head, and that's
Yeah,
fine.
I don't need it, right?
I
Like
don't need to know
this is
exactly
for
where.
you. I would love to, right? It's like would be great to hear from you, but if you're not ready for that, if you don't want to, that's fine too, because there's still value in it. Where what was your unlock moment? How did you get here? What is the moment when you decided that the path for you was going to be different than the one you were on?
So I often say that I have the world's most eclectic CV. And it was only quite recently in the last 5 years that I've understood really how it all comes together. And that's to do with understanding my unlock moment. So I left school and went to medical school. So I was going to be a doctor. I did 8 years of training at medical school, did a PhD, did a program with integrated training. And at the age of 27 was what I now realize was an unlocked moment. I didn't really realize that at the time. I was on my own. I had been unhappy, frustrated at medical school for many years, but not really naming that. I
Yeah.
just wasn't really enjoying it. I wasn't finding a thing where I was like, oh, I love this. This I'm going to do for the next 40 years. And I was walking down the corridor in my lab, and this thought landed in my head like a bolt of lightning on a dark night. And that thought was, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. So it wasn't you're going to quit, or you should quit, or you should go and do something else. It was if you wanted to quit, you can. It might be a stupid idea. So I say it wasn't a solution, it wasn't a plan, it was just permission. And I didn't know until I was in conversation. Funnily enough, I think it was with Michael Leibron on the podcast. And she said, I think there's something in your story about freedom. Because, and the more I thought about it, I went, the reason why I was feeling that medicine and being a doctor wasn't the path was because, and I couldn't name it then, but it felt constraining. The whole career path, the training, the you've got to acquire this volume of knowledge. And I'm not really a volume of knowledge person. I'm more a problem solver, but I didn't understand that at the time. I went from there into consulting. I became a strategy consultant for about a decade. I then moved into retail. So I worked for a mother and baby retailer, a bit like Babies R Us, the UK equivalent to Babies R Us. I became their group strategy director. I became on their executive team, ran the UK store network. I moved on, worked in luxury retail with Selfridges in London, was their group strategy director in COVID. So I joined in February, and in March we shut the store for COVID. So that was, you know, leading in a crisis. And along the way, I'd always been this. It'll make sense when I explain it all. I was always a ballroom dancer. My thing when I was growing up, my like hobby when I was growing up was that I was a little ballroom dancer from the age of 4 years old. But when I was doing these jobs in my 20s and 30s, and this is how I met my wife, we were professional competitive ballroom dancers. So we would work during the day, and then we would train in the evenings, travel in the UK and internationally at the weekends to do competitions. And I was like, I don't know what the thread through medicine, consulting, retail, leadership, and ballroom dancing is. And then I, in my mid 40s, I was like, and I really love executive coaching, so I'm going to go do that and leave some of the other stuff behind. And then I was like, hang on, freedom. Freedom is, I don't want to be in medicine. I want to be in something where I don't need to have all the knowledge to be able to add value. And that's consulting. And kind of in retail, I was still doing that. I was like, I'm not a retail expert, but I'm solving problems, which are new and at-pace problems. Dancing is an incredible expression of freedom. And at some point, I went, I just don't want to be employed by somebody. I don't want a boss who tells me what I have to do and when I have to show up. And so now I have a thing that I'm starting to write about, this idea of leadership aplomb. And I feel it. Leadership aplomb, aplomb is a dance term. If you're a ballet dancer and you are exactly on balance, like to the millimeter on balance, you can stay on balance and you are completely relaxed because you're perfectly aligned. And if you move a centimeter or two off balance, actually your muscles suddenly have to work to hold you in that position. You can stay on, you can stay not on the floor because your muscles hold you up. But when you're on aplomb, it means you're absolutely there. And today, because I've been through this journey and through these changes, I'm really clear. You know, I want to do coaching and podcasting and writing and speaking because I love it. And you might go to me, well, you could make more money, or you could be more successful, or be more famous, or whatever, doing something else. And I go, I might, but I'm really clear. I'm comfortable, absolutely comfortable, unquestioningly, that I'm doing the right thing. It might evolve and change over time, and I'm fine with that too. So when you say to me, and somebody said to me this year, will you come and work for us full time? And I just said, thank you, but no. I didn't think about it. I didn't take it away to think about, because I was like, because freedom. I'm doing what I'm doing without, you know, I'm independent, not employed, because I'm really clear. And now when you see great leaders, they have aplomb. You might not agree with them, and they might not be perfect, but they're clear that what they did was what they meant to do, and then the consequences follow from that. And when you start to see people, and this is, could be senior leaders, it could be people just in the midst of organizations where they go, I know why I'm here. I know how I'm showing up. Suddenly they can relax. I do a leadership, well, like a talent development program, actually for very junior people in a major city institution, let's call it that. And it's actually for people who are executive assistants, team coordinators, very, very junior people. And we ask some of these questions. We do some of this work. And these are people who don't have a huge amount of control in their work because they're in junior roles. They're working for somebody else who pretty much is going to define their tasks and define their time. And I say to them, you won't have full control or anywhere near full control, but you probably have more control than you thought you did. And you probably have within you a clarity of why you're here doing this. Somebody on the program said, I'm here because my daughter, like you, does ballroom dancing. And I want to be home on time to have dinner with her. And I want to earn enough money that I can take her to her competitions. And I want to enjoy helping her make her competition outfit. And she suddenly went, so I can let go of all the things I worry about in my work, because it's not about that. I just need to think about, have I got a job? Am I earning the money to enable me to enjoy at the weekend going to a dance competition with my daughter? And I was like, that's it. And suddenly you could visibly see she relaxed into all these things that were really frustrating her before, because she found that aplomb, because she'd found the, ah, oh, this is why I'm here. And that's what matters for me. And it perfectly fits with what I have to do in my role, because my role is serving my higher purpose.
So, I mean, so one thing is I like this construct, this idea of aplomb. I think the way that you're describing it, I think you could also describe it as like when you're in flow, when you have this, and there's, there's just a few moments that I can remember in my life where I've been in complete flow, and you just know that everything is, it's just fine. It's like you're in the right place, you're doing the right thing, you're making the right decision, and it's without force. It's just going with what the energy is in the moment. How do you, how
It's a
would you
really,
just.
I think it feels like that. And I think that's a really good comparison. And I'm, you're making me think about it. You can come in and out of flow. So I can knock you out of flow. When you know who you are and why you're here and how you choose, it's very difficult to knock those people out. So I describe a, how do you find your leadership aplomb from understanding yourself through exploring your unlocked moment? I describe a thing called triple clarity, which I found really helpful to help people get unstuck. So whether you're a leader, you're in an organization, or you're working with somebody who's trying to figure something out, really, really often the first question is, I'm trying to figure out whether I turn left or turn right. I'm trying to figure out whether I go for the promotion or I don't. I'm trying to figure out whether I quit my job or don't. I'm trying to
Right.
figure out whether
Take
I
the job or not. Do the th
go on this course, spend this money, whatever. It and I say, right, you're looking for clarity of action. You're looking for, do I go left or do I go right? You can't answer that question until you've already answered clarity of decision. So clarity of action is, do I turn left or right? Clarity of decision is, how do I choose whether I turn left or right? So some people choose whether to go left or right based on money. Some people choose based on balance. Some people choose based on fame. Some people choose based on legacy. Some people choose based on what their friends did. It could be, it doesn't matter. But you need to know what drives you. So for the woman I described, she chooses based on her daughter's happiness. Her happiness at her desk in work is irrelevant if her daughter's happy. To understand how you choose whether you turn left or right, you need clarity of self, which is, who am I? What matters to me? What are my strengths? What are my talents? What's my purpose? If you know that, so I know that something really foundational to me is freedom. So how I choose is the one that feels freer, or the one that feels less constraining. And when I apply that lens to all my forks in the road, I'm really clear why I took each step. I wasn't clear at the time. There was something in me that said turn left. Now I go, oh yeah, it's the freer one, wasn't it? Or you lent away from the sense of constraint. So when people are saying, I feel stuck, you need to ask a different question. It comes back to questions. The question is, how do you choose between options? So for you, Josh, is there an example that for you where you can think of a time in your career where you had choices?
Yeah, of course. I mean, all the time, right? Take the job, not take the job, continue consulting, not continue consulting, trying to do something else. It's all the time. I feel like, as in, to your point, and you know this too, right? It's like it's infinite. You have all the control in the world when you're working for yourself, right? It's all of those things.
So, how do you choose what you choose?
So I just started another little project called the Job Market Shit Show. And
Great title.
thank you. And do I need another podcast in Substack to write? No. But I did it because I felt really interested in exploring and understanding what the hell is going on in the job market because I could not get a good answer. And I chose to do that not for financial reasons, although if anybody would like to sponsor the podcast, I'd be open to it. It is because I was really interested in what was changing and understanding the opportunities for creation. I'm a creative guy. I like to think about the future. I like to think about things that are being created. And so I just threw myself into this project of talking to a million people because I wanted to understand what was changing. So I don't have a single word. It's not freedom. I don't know if it's creativity either, but that I think is a recent example of a decision I made, but maybe I don't understand why as well as I should.
Talk to me again about your run.
My run. It was helping people do bed improve their lives through work.
What did you know in that moment that you didn't know before?
That I really believed in the power of business to help people be better, have more alignment in their own lives. I think businesses has a have a really powerful role to play, and we can certainly do more with our lives if we don't fight the work that we're doing, where we spend all of our time.
I love that. So I'm writing at the moment the book of the Unlock Moment. And the first part of the book talks about unlock moments, what they are, how it works, some of the stories. The second part of the book is the five keys of unlocking, not how to lead, but how to go from a really competent leader who can do all the stuff to a great leader who gets inspires people to follow them. And the five keys are key to self, really knowing yourself and saying that. Key to trust, which is trusting yourself and inspiring trust in others. The third is key to presence. So becoming really aware of how you show up and how you create a sense of presence. It's not a sort of speaking skills presence. It's more like a leadership shadow kind of presence. And then the two that you've just talked to, the key to growth, which is you believe in that you're not finished and that you can explore and expand. And that to me is your creativity that you said. I'm a creative person and you are curious and you're an explorer. And then the fifth one is the key to impact, which is through others. And you said, I'm impacting a million people. I'm re trying to reach a million people. So there's a growth piece, the curiosity, and then there's an impact piece. And if it's just the curiosity but doesn't go anywhere, it's lovely, but it's not great. But what you're doing, and I love this in the title of your podcast, this it's both of those together. This kind of conversation is the beginnings of an understanding of a person. Imagine we're working together, and instead of me going, "Well, I showed you the slide with our vision and our purpose and our mission on it, and I'm slightly wondering why you're not paying much attention." Well, I didn't know any of the things about you that would have helped me to connect in with you as to what made you excited about what you do. And that's you, uniquely you. That isn't me. So we can then have the same conversation about me, and you'll be like, "Oh, me having a thing for freedom doesn't mean I can't be employed. Just mean that that might be a choice that I make." But even if in employment, I'm like, I love playing a cross team kind of role. I'm not that interested in a kind of role where it's very routine based. It's like every Monday morning you're in this meeting, and every Thursday afternoon you're in that meeting. So I understand, even within an organization, within a role, how to play my role in a way that feels authentic to who I am. And this is the culture piece. This is the culture piece that I'm working with an organization at the moment, and they are asking a question, do we need to do, or how should we do, a big culture exercise with external advisors and events, and great, nothing wrong with that at all. I would say you've always got to be a bit wary of the prices that people quote for those things, but then last week a team just did a there's like an all hands, and a team talked about some of the work they were doing, and the story was a core team doing something, and then they talked about how a whole series of people from different parts of the organization had come and helped. They'd reached out, or those people had said, "Oh, I know you're trying to do something really important. Any way I could help, I'd love to come and help what you're doing." And I was talking to the CEO, and I said, "That, bottle that is your culture. People doing their jobs in a certain way because they want to. It's important, it's powerful, it's impactful. They asked for help, people came and helped them. Other people offered the services. The whole organization organically worked. Nobody told them to do that. There isn't a slide with behaviors, well, there is a slide with behaviors, but what they did just naturally did all those things.
It came from
You
the
have
inside.
to have the stuff around, the operating model, the guidelines, the frameworks, the behavior, all of that stuff, the measures. But the culture comes from within.
And that's why it's so unique to every organization, every team, every purpose, and that's why it's so hard to wrangle, right? You really can't force it. You can't say, here is the way that you should do it. It's different for everyone.
But you can enable it. So here's a story. I had a period of my career, was in retail, and I was in charge of a program to put digital screens in the stores of a national retail chain. And almost all the screens were to go on the shop floor, and they were to show product information and videos and all this kind of stuff. And you could kind of do a business case for those screens and say, "Well, we can do A/B testing. We can show that if we put this really expensive product on, we'll sell more of the product." And then I said, "I really want to put one screen in the staff room of each store." And we managed to get the business case signed off. And they said, "What are you going to do with the screen?" I said, "Tell stories." I said, "I want that screen. It'll be a very simple screen. It will be basically slides created in head office of photographs of a store colleague somewhere who's done a good thing today. And everyone else can go, 'Oh, hey, that's an amazing thing.'" And that was the screen that made all the difference in the uplift of performance in the stores. Because when a thing went up on the screen saying, "George in Aberdeen just sold a pushchair a day after receiving their training," and everyone else went, "That's really amazing. Hey, maybe I could sell a pushchair as well," because George would sell a pushchair, and the manager could go, "Hey, can we sell, see if we can sell two pushchairs? And let's get George on the phone and tell us all what he did to sell that pushchair." And it was like, what we did was we gave them the method of communication to see what was happening and to talk to each other, and then allowed them to do the thing. So sometimes the active thing you need to do in the culture build is just to create the ability for the organization to do the good stuff. And that's often not there.
Yeah.
But what you shouldn't try too hard to force is the how they're doing it. You've got to shape it, you've got to guide it. But the more it can be built by them, the better it is.
Yeah.
We learned that when you're refurbishing a store, you want to get the people who are going to work in the store to help build the cupboards. Because when they've built the cupboards, they come into the store and they're like, "This is my store. I built this." And they keep the cupboards tidy and clean because it's like theirs. If it's a pristine store and they walk into it and they haven't built the cupboards, then it's somebody else's cupboards.
So many, I mean, that is such a great anecdote that describes that kind of from within. And I have so many stories like that. I do a lot of my process is based on that same premise of participation, because you just can't hand it to somebody. It doesn't work like that. Dr. Gary Krotaz, really appreciate you coming on, sharing so many amazing stories. The Unlock Moment podcast, if you haven't subscribed, you absolutely should. He's the international keynote speaker and executive coach and forthcoming author, I presume. If you want to learn more and stay in touch, GaryKrotaz.com, GaryKrotaz.com. Thanks for coming on. Great Mondays Radio. It was amazing to speak with you.
Thanks so much, Josh. It was a great pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest on our program, head over to radio.greatmondays.com and fill in the application. Have a friend you think would find this episode interesting? Send it to them. And while you're at it, rate and review. It really helps. I'd love to connect. Send me an email, josh@greatmondays.com. And if you're interested in learning more about how I help private businesses elevate how teams operate in an AI-driven world, check out greatmondays.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.